AFC champion, New England Patriots.
Somewhere between a WWE wrestling event and a concert, the hype, hoopla, and inane inquiries of Super Bowl opening night came to Minnesota last night. You had all the players out there. The Patriots went first, and then you had the Eagles. You have media members milling about asking questions. Some of them are serious, and they're about Super Bowl 52. Many of them are not. They're questions from late-night TV. Personalities like Guillermo from the Jimmy Kimmel Show, who seem to have perplexed Bill Belichick with some of his jokes and some of his questions. I'm Chris Gasper. It's Tuesday, January 30th, and welcome to Season Ticket from Super Bowl 52. I'm here with Nora Princiati, Boston Globe Patriots beat reporter. We're coming to you from Radio Row. Nora, how did Super Bowl opening night go for you?
It was awesome, Chris. I spent about half of it contorted underneath a tripod of someone taking video of Tom Brady just to be able to get close enough so that I could, you know, get an eyeball or two on him and hopefully hear what he was saying, throw in a question. But it was fun. It was a blast.
Yeah, the first time at the Super Bowl that we get to talk to the teams. The Patriots arrived yesterday. The Eagles came in Sunday, but it was their first media availability. And obviously the big story last night was Tom Brady and the story with WEEI about the comments that were made about his daughter Vivian and the fact that he truncated his interview with WEEI on Monday, that contractually obligated interview. What did he have to say about that and about basically, you know, hanging up on the WEI guys and expressing his displeasure over the comment about his daughter?
Yeah, I thought he was really gracious.
I just said I certainly hope the guy's not fired. That's I would hate for that to happen. I think we all go through our life and sometimes we say things that we shouldn't say or we make mistakes and that happens and I can express it and you move on. So
I think overall he just said, I'm always going to respond to things about my family.
Well, I just think any parent is really protective of their kids. And, you know, I've never stayed away from criticism. I understand that, you know, criticism is part of sports, but I certainly don't think that, you know, my children or any other children, you know, really deserve to be in that. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I think because it was the Super Bowl, this story sort of just blew up. And because we really didn't have anything with the game to talk about, that was sort of the big story. And anything involving Tom Brady is going to be a huge, huge story there. What were some of the football questions and football elements that Tom talked about? Because Tom's a big part of the Super Bowl, and that's duh, the obvious. But really, it's about his legacy at this point, too. He's won the 5 Super Bowls, and he has an opportunity to win a 6 and really separate himself in NFL history. And he also comes into this as a multiple-time Super Bowl MVP, and there's probably a lot of pressure on him. And I think the biggest reason people look at this game and say the Patriots are going to win is they say Nick Foles, Eagles, Tom Brady, Patriots.
Sure. Well, he answered a few questions about, you know, the Eagles' defensive front and are you having nightmares of Fletcher Cox ruining your life? But he did get a lot of questions about, you know, what advice would you give to Nick Foles in this situation? And I think Brady answered those questions in a way that I've seen him answer questions about a lot of young or less experienced quarterbacks. I know he got a similar round of questioning about Marcus Mariota, for instance, and to a certain extent Blake Bortles. He basically just said, if they're in this spot, they don't need my advice. I'm sure they're getting advice from plenty of people. But yeah, I mean, it totally came up. That's certainly, you see the obvious distinction between, you know, Nick Foles, a backup, has kind of struggled through the beginning of his career, and Tom Brady.
The greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady. And that's one of the reasons I think that people look at this and the Patriots are the favorites, but Brady was having no part of the idea that the Eagles are the underdogs.
I mean, there's no underdogs in the Super Bowl. They're right. The first seed in the NFC, man. They're 13-3. I mean, they had an incredible season, so I don't buy into any of that.
Tom can say whatever he wants about, oh, anybody in the Super Bowl isn't an underdog, but he knows that's not true because you go back to Super Bowl 36 and people looked at and said, Kurt Warner, this Tom Brady kid who's in his second year and we don't even know how good he is, and they were obvious underdogs in that Super Bowl, and they used that to motivate themselves and fuel themselves. So Tom knows there are underdogs in the Super Bowl, but how big an underdog in your opinion are the Eagles, and is that warranted when you look at it, you know, when you take the brand names out of it, Belichick, Brady versus Peterson, Foles? I mean, the Eagles were a 13-3 team. They were the number one seed in the NFC, and they were the best team all year long. It's just that they don't have Carson Wentz, who looked like he was going to win an MVP.
Right. Well, the thing is that I think you can't take the brand names out of it, because I think the Eagles have a deep and talented roster that, you know, was put together, just a fabulous example of roster construction. It's really interesting how they've done it, you know, and there's no better example, really, than the quarterback position. I mean, obviously, they would prefer to have Carson Wentz, but most teams, if they lose their MVP candidate starting quarterback, they're not in this position anymore. So I think tons of credit to the Eagles. But you can't ignore the fact that it's Belichick, Peterson, Brady, Foles. It's just, it's undeniable. So even though I think that there are a lot of places where the Eagles can cause the Patriots problems, it's just going to come down to the fact that Brady can drive his team down the field on a consistent basis, even against a really good defense, I think. Whereas Foles, you know, I think field position is going to be huge in this game, because you know Belichick is going to want to pin them deep and force Foles to move the ball. And I'm just not buying it, you know. I'm not betting the mortgage on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because I think when you look at what they're going to make Foles do, they're going to make him drive the field and string together 7-8 play drives, be consistent, be accurate, make good decisions time after time after time, and do that for 4, 5, 6 drives. And when you get down there, you then have to put the ball in the end zone. So in the playoffs, the Eagles are 3 out of 5 in terms of red zone touchdown percentage. And in the regular season, they were number one in that. But a lot of that was with Carson Wentz. What the Patriots don't want to do is what they did the first 4 games of the year, which is bust coverages and give up big plays and let the Eagles get yards in big bulk chunks, because that makes it a lot easier on Foles. And that's kind of how Philadelphia's offense is set up to function. And I think that's one thing that the Patriots will definitely try and take away, is those easy sort of big chunk plays that take a drive that's a 70-yard drive, but it's only 4 or 5 plays because you got 35 yards on one play.
Sure. I mean, I'm really interested to see, you know, you figure you'll probably see Stephon Gilmore on Alshon Jeffrey. And I think that'll be fascinating, because if you talk about the beginning of the season, one of the hallmarks of the Patriots' struggles was that Gilmore just looked lost. Now, since, you know, maybe week 5 or 6 in the season, he's been fantastic. You know, he hasn't been perfect all the time, but his ceiling is so high. And so he could go a long way to doing that, you know, to limiting those big chunk plays. So I think that'll be fascinating to watch.
Absolutely. To swing it back to Super Bowl opening night here, I thought one of the things that was interesting, just from an observation standpoint, was here are the Patriots in their 8th Super Bowl. A lot of people in the NFL regard them as the evil empire. They're tired of seeing the Patriots win. They're tired of Brady and Belichick's dominance over the NFL. I know that the people back in New England, we're not tired of it. But the rest of the NFL, the rest of the country, they're tired of it. There's a little bit of fatigue there. However, what's interesting here is that the Eagles are the hated team here in Minnesota, because they just defeated the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC Championship game. They blew up what looked to be a season of destiny for the Vikings, the whole Minnesota miracle thing against the Saints. And so on Super Bowl opening night, there weren't a lot of boos, or any boos really, for the Patriots. But when the Eagles came out, there was booing. These Minnesota fans, I think, are rooting for the Patriots, which is remarkable, because that never happens to the Patriots in a neutral site situation with neutral fans. So season ticket producer Josh Schwartz actually spoke to some Vikings fans about this very thing yesterday in downtown Minneapolis.
All right, so what are you guys' names?
I'm Brenda.
And I'm Janelle.
So are you guys football fans?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
We're Vikings fans.
Vikings? How are you feeling these days?
We were way up, and now we're kind of accepted it. Yeah.
We have the miracle play.
Yeah, we have the miracle play.
Who are you guys rooting for come Sunday?
We're going Patriots. Yeah,
Patriots. What about, what are your feelings on Eagles fans?
I wasn't happy with that, but hopefully we can let bygones be bygones and have a good game.
Show, and show Philadelphia the true brotherly love city is here.
Yeah. It's cold, but we enjoy it here. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. My hands are a little cold right now.
You should get some gloves with fingertips. The right. Minnesota store has them.
Minnesota store? All right, great. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Have a good time.
You know, the Vikings making the Super Bowl, as far as revenue, would have been bad for Minnesota. You know, places make these deals to finance stadiums, and part of it is, okay, well, you'll get a Super Bowl and you'll get all this tourism and you'll, you know, people go to restaurants and everything. And
or a mall food court.
Sure, totally, absolutely. It's great to be speaking with you staring at the Hot Pepper Palace across the street. But if half of the people or half of the draw was the hometown team, you know, that's a lot less money. So if you look at it that way in terms of, you know, the taxpayers getting some of their money back, it's good for Minnesota that the Vikings aren't here, but I don't think anybody feels that way.
So you're speaking about it financially and logically. I think they're thinking of it viscerally and emotionally, which is our team could have been in the Super Bowl at home, and
yes,
these guys stopped
yes
it from happening,
yes,
and we hate them for that. So I just thought that was really sort of an interesting kind of, you know, subtext to win on, to what went on last night, was that this idea that I think nationally you get a lot of stories that are written that it's the big bad Patriots, but that's not the reception that they've gotten here. And I wonder if part of that too is the fact that, you know, Tom Brady's connection to Minnesota, you know, through his grandparents on his mother's side, his mom Galen, grew up in Minnesota. And if, I wonder if that's part of it, if enough people have read about Tom spending some summers on his late grandfather's farm and said, well, you know, he's sort of one of us and we don't like this other team. And maybe there's just an appreciation here for greatness.
That's very possible. I mean, I think also you see this in other places. People who can kind of get a piece of Tom Brady and say, no, I'm with that guy, I think they flip that switch very quickly.
That's
like,
true.
I have friends from California, like around San Mateo, and they love Tom Brady and they love the Patriots. So I think it's kind of, you know, it's like an extended bandwagon where if you can say, no, that's our guy too, why wouldn't you want to? It's Tom
Absolutely.
Brady.
Absolutely. Here is Tom Brady at 40 years old, and if he wins this game, he's the oldest quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl. He's the oldest non-punter or kicker to play in a Super Bowl. What did Tom have to say about extending his career? You know, obviously beyond this season, he signed through 2019, but being able to play at this level at this age.
Yeah, well, he said that it's not something that he ever expected, really, but that he'll do it until he can't. And I think the way that he defines can't is until he's bad.
Well, I never want to be, you know, a detriment to the team. So I think for me, as long as I'm playing at a high level and I make the commitment to take care of myself year-round, then I'll continue to play. So,
but what's bad for Tom Brady? Like, what does that look as bad, like Alex Smith level? Like, what's bad?
Well, no, that's a good question. I think the thing you wonder about is he going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming off of a football field? Or if there's a slight deterioration, and again, we're talking about a guy who, you know, MVP caliber at age 40, if there's a gradual decline, then you got to figure he's still got a few more years of being a really good high-level quarterback. So that's what we don't know.
Like, Brock, you know, Osweiler's bad.
Sure.
Right? If Tom Brady were to step down and, say, play at, like, an Andy Dalton level, that's not his level, but that's not a bad quarterback.
Sure, yeah. I mean, and I think that that's probably somewhere around the line where he might say,
he's like,
you know,
if I'm Andy Dalton, I'm done.
I'm
That's
done.
It. I'm out.
It's over.
I'm out.
It's
Brady
all over.
Out. Another mic drop like yesterday at the rally. Brady out if I'm playing
I
like
can't
Andy
go
Dalton.
On like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this Patriots team with Andy Dalton, I do not believe would be here.
I think that's pretty safe to say.
Yeah. So if that were the situation, I have a hard time seeing him going on just because I think he's defined this level of excellence for himself that I kind of do think that bad is, you know, it's probably even above replacement level,
yeah,
right? Like, because it's so different from what the track record that he has established.
Yeah, and that plays into something that we're going to get to next year, which is there is this level of wistfulness, I think, to the Super Bowl for the Patriots, this level of appreciation, this idea that maybe they're not going to get to do this too many more times, certainly not together with the coordinators. And what we're going to talk about next on Season Ticket after a brief timeout is the fact that we got to talk to some coaches that we normally don't get to talk to because they had to be made available at Super Bowl opening night. So we'll ask Nora about that next. Welcome back. If you like Season Tickets, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you got your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, I'm back now with Nora Princiati of the Boston Globe. We're here on Radio Row at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, talking about Super Bowl opening night. And one of the things I've always liked about doing Super Bowl opening night, or media day as it used to be known, is that they have to make all the coaches available. And as we all know with the Patriots, it's not always easy to talk to some of these coaches. Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator, they do the conference call during the year, but you don't get to talk to them face to face. Both of those guys expected to leave. Patricia to the Detroit Lions, McDaniels to the Indianapolis Colts. Will be McDaniels' second coaching job. What did you think of what McDaniels had to say, not only about what is going to be his last game as Patriots offensive coordinator, but about moving forward and sort of leaving the Bill Belichick nest again?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, when you're face-to-face with people, you can sort of look at their eyes and try to, that sounds so creepy, but you can really try to get a better sense of their body language and the emotion behind what they're saying. It's different from being on a conference call. And Josh seemed, you know, kind of nostalgic.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, at one point, coming to the Patriots, you know, being young, and he had a wife, and he was like, we had no money, but we were in love. And, you know, it was actually kind of cheesy almost, but in a cute way.
Is this a rom-com or an interview?
I know. And it was so different from the normal, well, we'll just do what's best for the team and all the players work hard that we're used to. And it was even different from, I would say, you know, he got asked a few times about sort of lessons learned in Denver and why, at least the implication is why the second time around should go better. And he was still a little bottled up about that. He said, you know, I hope I'm better in a lot of areas than I was a week ago or
sure.
a year ago or many years ago. But talking about the old days and his first days in New England really seemed to have struck a chord with him, and he got kind of emotional about it.
You know, for the Patriots, do you think they're prepared to replace these two guys? I mean, this is a big change, and one of the things with the Patriots, they've had so much continuity and consistency with the coaching staff outside of Belichick, and these guys that have sort of come up in Belichick U, they've learned the Belichick way, and it can kind of be a little bit of a brain drain when people leave. So when you look at Chad O'Shea, who's expected to step in for McDaniels, O'Shea is currently the wide receivers coach, and Brian Flores, the linebackers coach, who's expected to step in for Patricia, do you think the Patriots are in a good position in terms of succession at those positions?
I think they're in an okay position. I mean, I think they would prefer to not have to go through this, but it's a fact of life in the NFL. You know, you look at those two guys, and one thing that I think is interesting about them is that they both are effectively the red zone coordinators on either side of the ball. And that's been an area of strength for the Patriots, both defensively, and it was actually a little iffy on offense earlier in the season, but they've done a good job of getting
top five.
Together. Yeah, offensively, they pulled it out.
They got it together.
So, you know, all the players say that those guys are ready and have what it takes. And if you look at things like red zone as their body of work, it seems like the pipeline is strong there, but it's still, you know, I like that you called it a brain drain. Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia have been really big parts of this run, and they're going to be somewhere else, and that's tough, particularly as you look at an organization that, you know, they could very well draft a quarterback this year, and so then you no longer have McDaniels, who obviously had a lot of success with Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's just that all of the change seems to be happening at once.
Yeah,
I think that's the tough thing.
You're absolutely right. It does feel that way, all this change happening at once. I think what helps Bill Belichick is that he's been through this before, and it's actually sort of interesting. It's a little bit ironic because the last time they were trying to repeat and win 3 out of 4, they faced the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl. That was in Jacksonville after the 2004 season, and they went into that game knowing they were losing both the offensive and defensive coordinators. Charlie Weiss was the offensive coordinator. He was going to become the head coach of Notre Dame. Romeo Crennel was the defensive coordinator. You know, he was leaving to go coach the Cleveland Browns. So Bill's been through this before, but I think it's really interesting because there's this whole sense around this Super Bowl with this team that it's sort of like the last ride. You know, it's the last, this is it. This is like the last ride for everybody. And I don't know if that puts more pressure on them to win this game. There's already obviously an enormous amount of pressure, but it just seems like that's the whole undercurrent of this thing, that that take the football out of it, because that's what we see. But these are people who consider themselves a family and deeply care about each other. And they know this is the last time they're all going to be together like this.
You know, Brady said something sort of about that. He was in part referring to his family and saying that he hoped that they could have a happy ending on Super Bowl Sunday because it would mean that everybody gets to celebrate together. But that, you know, together was something that he kept saying over and over again. And I think that is in the back of their minds that, you know, particularly for Brady and McDaniels, that's a very close relationship.
Yes, it is.
And I think that that would mean a lot to them as Josh leaves to be able to go out with one more.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that relationship is more than coach-player. I mean, they're almost like brothers.
Well, and the thing that I think is interesting about that is that, you know, McDaniels and Brady are basically the same age, whereas Brady is in a totally different place in his life than most of his teammates. You know, he's supposed to be relating to guys who are 23, 24, and just care
about...
Like
your age.
Well, sure, yes. And Tom Brady is an alien to me. No, just kidding. But you know...
He gets none of your pop culture references. I know that.
He gets none of anybody's pop culture references. He was terrible answering like the Access Hollywood questions last night. He didn't know anything except he didn't know who Aaron Rodgers is dating, which I found fascinating because that would seem the type of thing that Tom Brady might want to pretend. Oh, I don't pay attention to those other quarterbacks and their love lives, but he knew Danica Patrick.
Name four actors who were just nominated for an Oscar. I'd have no idea.
No idea. All right, next one.
Who is hosting the Oscars? Extras Hollywood focus? I have no idea. Kim and Kanye just had a little girl. What's her name?
Chicago?
I do not know. Name all of Tom Brady's kids. I know that.
All right, good.
Who's Aaron Rodgers dating Danica Patrick?
See?
I saw that.
Yes.
Can you name any of the characters on Game of Thrones? You got to find someone who's more into pop culture.
Good for Tom. I guess he gets some of this stuff from his teammates. But that's really interesting. So, like, there's that undercurrent there. And, again, to go back to the idea, it's really cool to talk to these coaches. So I got to talk to Brian Flores. And I always tell this story. I was at the Combine in 2008, I think it was. And he's really paid his dues and waited his turn. And he told a great story about starting out with the Patriots. He said that when he was doing that, he was living with some of his former Boston College teammates, because he played football at Boston College, including linebacker Greg Toll. And he was sleeping in an attic on an air mattress. And we were asking him, you know, hey, you know, how much were you making? And he basically was saying, about my rent money, like just enough to pay the rent. And he said that when the attic got really, really cold, because attics normally are not insulated, he would go and stay at his girlfriend's place. That's now his wife. And it was just an interesting story to sort of, you know, how much this guy's put in to get to the point where he's going to have an opportunity to be the defensive coordinator. And I'm not sure that people always realize how much these coaches put in just to get to the point where the average fan knows their name.
Well, and it's interesting because it seems like, you know, and not to take anything away from other guys who have a sort of different path, but it does seem like for coaches, there's kind of like, there are the hot shots who rise so quickly. And then there are guys who you really, if you learn about it, they've been grinding for decades in a lot of cases. So, yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of players about Brian Flores, and the reviews are all spectacular, and a lot of them hinge on just personal relationships. And it seems like he's really, really, really strong in that area. And I think part of that is that players know that he's paid his dues, and they take him seriously and have a lot of respect for him on those grounds.
What are you looking for the rest of the week here as we get into the more regular availabilities, and it probably ramps up to be more sort of game-specific discussion? What are you, Nora Princiati, looking to see as we get into that aspect of the week, closer to the game?
Oh, I just want to hang out at the mall. No. I'm excited to talk some football. I think it'll be interesting to see how, you know, as the week goes on and guys get asked a lot of the same questions over and over and over again. I'm actually really curious to see how the Eagles handle the quote-unquote Patriots mystique.
Yeah.
Because it seems like, for the most part, they've kind of taken it head on. But you know, what happens when you're hearing about it for the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th time? You know, sometimes that gets guys kind of flustered. So I'm just curious to kind of watch the demeanors on both sides.
Can I tell you why that's, and you might be better at reading personalities than I am, can I tell you why that can be dangerous?
Go for it.
Super Bowl 42, Patriots-Giants. I was a Patriots beat writer. I spent most of my time with the Patriots, but I was like, I want to go to one Giants availability. Their availability was like at some ranch or something in Chandler, Arizona. And I remember I walked in. It just seemed super subdued. I turned to Albert Breer, who used to work for the Globe and now works for the MMQB. I just turned to him and I said, you know, this just feels like the losing team's media availability. So the demeanor thing is not always accurate, but maybe you're a better judge of demeanor
point
than
taken,
I am.
Point taken, point taken.
I was like, this just feels like the losing team. There's no energy here. These guys seem like resigned to losing to the 18-0 Patriots. I couldn't have been any more wrong.
That's so funny. Well, yeah, I mean, I've certainly had my fair share of trying to, you know, play body language judge with Bill Belichick on Fridays. And thinking, oh, he seems like he's in a good mood. They're going to trounce him. And then it just doesn't happen, or they play a shoddy game. But we'll see. It'll be curious to watch. It's funny to watch the guys like LeGarrette Blount or Chris Long, who sort of know both sides of it, and see how they respond. I thought they both were interesting last night. I hung around for Eagles availability. And they were both so frank and forthcoming. It's almost a little bit jarring as someone who used to see those guys, and they were great in the locker room last year, but still they were in Patriot world and had to play their cards close to the vest. It's so sort of bizarre to see them all of a sudden just talking about anything and totally, you know, they both were kind of like, yeah, no, I loved New England, but it is a little bit more relaxed here.
Nora, that's why we like having you on Season Ticket. You can talk about anything, too. Thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely, Chris. Anytime.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Chris Gasper, signing off from the Mall of America. We'll be back here tomorrow.